This is The God Show, a conversation about the human spirit with your host, Pat McMahon.
Oh, I am so happy that you could be with me because you, if you are a regular listener to The God Show, you get to say what I hope you're going to say. My goodness, Pat's voice sounds so much better than he normally does. I asked God last night for a grown-up voice, so he gave me a cold, and I hope you'll bear with me. In fact, I've already been told by most of the people on this staff that I sound a great deal better than I normally do. So perhaps it won't be a major effort on your part. Most important thing is not how I sound. It's about what my guest has to offer you. And he represents a gift that seems to be incredibly elusive to individual people, to units of society and governments. And yet it would seem that everybody would want peace. Yes, that's the subject of The God Show today, as we welcome a gentleman that I only recently got acquainted with, but boy, what a career he has and has had. Chuck Fitzgerald. I get this right away. You know that he must be a harbinger of peace because he's the sergeant at arms for the Arizona House of Representatives. Now, automatically, whether it's the Nebraska House of Representatives or the Puerto Rico House of Representatives, or Arizona, you know that maintaining decorum and civility, that's got to be a time and a half job. I've got to ask you, Chuck, what is it you did that allowed you to gently and peacefully accept that title without struggling with whomever it was that forced you into it?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and I have to say, I have no idea how that happened. And you were introducing an amazing guest, and I can't wait to hear who that is.
Well,
and then you mentioned my name. I'm a little stunned.
They'll be the judge of that, yes. I promise you. So, Chuck,
yes.
So how does one become the sergeant at arms? I know that the Congress has one, and I am assuming that every House and every Senate.
Yeah, that's right. Every chamber, as we might say.
Yes.
You got to know somebody. This isn't a job they post on, one of the jobbing websites or anything like that. It's basically, you're kind of a known quantity. The people that are making the decisions at the time kind of look around at who they know and who's kind of out there, and they pick somebody, and it happened to be me. And
I'm going through your background.
Yeah.
Give me a two-minute bio
on
Chuck Fitzgerald.
Okay, very good. Born and raised in Ohio. I served 4 years in the Marine Corps and decided that wasn't for me, so I got out. I got into technology installation. I installed phone systems and whatnot, and that led into the software business. And so I sold software into large call centers for about 20 years, call centers like some of the major credit cards or airlines, those kind of things. Pretty high-end application sales. 9/11 happened. We all remember that, and that business went away for several years. And so I decided at that time that I would go make a difference. I'd go work for a nonprofit somewhere. None of them would have me. So lo and behold, I ended up at the state of Arizona working for the Arizona Department of Economic Security. So I worked there for a few years and got the attention of Governor Napolitano initially. I helped her with some of the things that were going on with the downturn in the economy back in roughly 07, 08. She left to go to D.C., and Secretary of State Brewer became governor, and Governor Brewer asked me to run her faith initiatives. So I did that for about 5 years.
Because you have a background in spirituality and faith academically.
A little bit of that, but it was more because I was calling the community to the work that the state couldn't keep up with. things like foster care, feeding people, helping the elderly. The state wasn't keeping up. Dollars were short at that time, so I was charged with calling the community to this crisis we had in Arizona. And a lot of the people I was calling to the crisis were faith leaders, were the faith community. So Governor Brewer asked me to take that on, and I did. I led her faith initiative and did that the entire time she was governor.
And those are the programs that often get cut first.
Yeah, and it's not because they're bad programs. It's just there's no money to pay the employees. And so I stepped away from state government for a couple years, and then I got a call back from somebody who was on her staff at the time, who's now the chief of staff at the House. So he looked across his list and said, I wonder if Chuck's available. And he called me, and here I am.
So and besides that, they needed another Irishman. I mean, if you're going to really get something done.
Of course, yes.
Are you or have you ever been considered in the family, the Fitzgerald family, as a pacifist?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I wasn't sure where you were going with that question.
Good.
But, I think I'm okay. I think I'm a good pedigree. I think I'm okay.
But that doesn't answer the question, right. Are you a pacifist?
No.
There are people who are not. No. Who are not pacifists who consider themselves okay.
No, I'm not a pacifist. I firmly believe in peace through strength. Imagine our communities if we didn't have police officers. That's peace through strength, right? And so I'm a firm believer that we need to have that to have peace. And on the global stage, whether that's our country or another country, there needs to be a benevolent strength in the world or evil's just going to take over. So I think being a pacifist is the wrong approach, but that's me.
So. Well, and you spent 4 years in the military.
Yes.
So you wouldn't be considered officially a pacifist,
right,
by the United States government. Was it tough for you? Was the Marine Corps difficult because philosophically you might have been on a different plateau of thought?
No, I don't think so. It's tough to remember what I thought at that time, but I believe that I thought that I was part of the good team, if you will. You know, the team that we weren't going and taking other people's lands or anything like that. We were setting other people free, and I thought that was a good thing. So I didn't have a conflict at all with that.
Define peace according to the Book of Fitzgerald.
Well, that's a tough one, right? I guess I would say... where all things are as they were designed to be.
By whom?
By the Creator, by God. You know, we're designed to function a certain way, as is nature. Everything is designed to function in that way. And it's not. I think we can look around and see that it's not. And I think that's the best definition I can give now that I think about that. But it's interesting, everybody has their own definition of peace. You know, sometimes it means we're not at war, right? But then
we're always at war, it seems.
Yeah, but the person that says that may be at war in a relationship, too, but they don't count that, right? And so there's lots of wars. There are big wars that are on the global stage, and there are those that are at the kitchen table. And,
And if
I don't know where I'm going with that.
Well, yeah. No, as a matter of fact, it answered my question, I thought, so well that it brought up yet another picture to me, and that is the War of the Spouses. That would be a perfect example of everyone's understanding of the absence of peace in your life.
Yeah, I would think so. Domestic violence in this country anyhow is at an all-time high. You know, you have the high school student that sees dad exacting justice with violence. Guess what that kid takes to high school? That's how problems are solved in my house. So I'm going to take that into my relationships at high school. And it just escalates from there. So I think peace within the family unit, I think that's where you have to start. You're never going to end wars if you can't figure out how to end the violence and the ugliness that you find in the immediate family.
But why aren't you ever going to end wars? That in itself is a question. that I've always asked, as I continue to read about conflict after conflict after conflict,
yeah.
whether it's the Sudan, or whether it's the Palestinians versus Israelis in small pockets of strife and tension and terror, or the act of a terrorist itself, private wars like that. It seems as if from the beginning of time, we've had violent acts perpetrated on one another. Why?
Yeah, well, I clearly I wasn't around the beginning of time, but I guess the way I would answer that is I would answer that as being the story we find in the Bible is we know that it's been bad from the beginning, and we know it's going to stay bad, and that's because man has fallen, and as long as fallen men are leading things, I think we're going to have those issues. But that doesn't mean we can't have peace in our households, in our communities. Doesn't mean it's tampered down, if you will. But there's evil in the world. Until evil's fully and finally defeated, I think we're going to have that issue.
You spent a great deal of your time talking to people about what they can do. When you're speaking to individuals, as I'm sure you do besides besides groups, besides Rotarians, I know that you're an active Rotarian, when you're called upon to do a speaking engagement about peace, turning the other cheek, if you will, whatever definition you use, to the absence of violence, what suggestions do you have for your audience?
Yeah, right. That's a great question. What I try to say and make a point of is that every act of service for another human being is an act of peace. So maybe you're a caregiver, right? You're spreading peace by doing that. If you're feeding somebody, if you're teaching a kid how to read, if you're supporting a nonprofit in your community, that's a way of promoting peace and acting in a peaceful way. So I think that's where you start. I think you start by thinking outside of yourselves, what can I do to make this other person more complete, improve their well-being without any benefit to myself? When I do that, that's an act of peace. And we see a lot of that. We see it everywhere in our communities. So I'm not saying things are hopeless. They're not hopeless at all. But people wonder, well, what can I do? Because when they think of peace, they think of, well, there's a problem over there somewhere. How am I going to help the South Sudanese? How am I going to help the Rwandans? How am I going to help the Palestinians or the Israelis?
It does seem almost impossible.
It does. And so what we can do is we can do small acts of service. We can get engaged with organizations that are working on that problem. We can elect officials, right, that can work on those problems. Here's another great example. One of the speakers we have at an upcoming conference is one of our Supreme Court justices here in Arizona, Clint Bullock. And he's going to talk about how when you serve on a jury, you're promoting peace. That's how you promote peaceful outcomes in your own community is by serving on a jury. So don't try to get out of jury duty, right? It's a small step you can make to make sure that justice is done in your community, because without justice, you cannot have peace. And so I think there are a lot of things that we can do. So that's how I talk about it. I don't talk about let's march on Washington, D.C., or get rid of all the nukes. Those things would be great. But how does the average citizen actually play into that?
And if you were so impressive to one member of one of those audiences, that he said, and go along with me on this, Chuck, if he said, Chuck Fitzgerald, I want you to address the United Nations. Here is now a gathering. Here you're a representative of peace, but most of your work is done in Arizona, and you've been very, very successful with the message. But when you're talking to the people representing the leadership of countries, of governments, can you talk them into being caregivers?
Yeah, another great question. So there is something, maybe you've heard the phrase before, maybe you have not. It's called positive peace. It's a phrase that the Institute for Economics and Peace has put together, and that institute is basically a research body, and it's economicsandpeace.org. And they have something called positive peace. What they've done is they've taken a look around the world at nations, and they've found 8 markers for a peaceful society. And I can't name all 8 right off the top of my head here, but I'll give
you an idea. Do the best you can.
I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about. One of those markers is a well-functioning government. If a country has a well-functioning government, chances are they're on the right track for peaceful outcomes. Another one that's kind of tied to that, another marker is low corruption. If there's low corruption, peace has got a little bit of a chance there. There's another one. Do neighbors talk to one another? Is there equal economic opportunity across all tribes and stratas? Those kind of things. So there are 8 of them, and they're called the 8 pillars of positive peace. If governments have those things in place, chances are they're going to have peaceful outcomes. I believe this year the United States is ranked 47th on that list.
Mm.
I don't recall who's number one. It might be Norway or somebody like that. But so the idea is, how do we, as individual systems, look at those 8 pillars and decide, how are we going to positively affect that area? Take well-functioning government, for instance. That means we have juries with competent people on it, right? Not just the people that don't have jobs, right? We have, everybody participates in that. We elect the right people. We have the best laws. All those things go into a well-functioning government. And so pick one of the 8 pillars that strikes you and go find something to do in that pillar. That's what I would tell those folks. So the 8 pillars of positive peace. And the idea behind it is, enough with telling me what not to do. I mean, you can tell me, don't steal that land, don't strike out against that tribe. That's one thing. But tell me something I can do. Here are 8 pillars with things in them you can do.
Where can we find all 8?
Economicsandpeace.org.
Economicsandpeace.org.
.org.
Well, folks are writing it down right now.
Yep.
But of the pillars that you mentioned, they just seemed fairly simple. They seemed fairly simple to actually wind up with as an element of your government's activities. Why is it so difficult for governments? Is it just a simple matter of greed?
Well, probably. If you peel it back, it probably is power and greed and those sort of things. I mean, the example that I give quite often is the container of food or medical supplies that gets dropped off in a country that really needs the stuff, and you can't get it through customs unless you pay somebody more than the stuff's worth.
Mm.
That sort of thing, that kind of corruption, that kind of, you take care of this guy because he's got to take care of the next guy who's got to take care of the next guy, or you're not getting your container through. That happens a lot around the world, and that's greed. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Okay, but that guy at the airport, that guy at the airport is either going to allow your stuff to pass through or not, or he gets a taste. He gets a little taste on the side. And he's going to tell you, well, that's wonderful, Mr. Fitzgerald, except for the fact I've got a sick child at home.
Yeah, I got to feed my family.
Right?
Right.
I'm making right now about $1.25 a day.
That's right.
And so this is the only way that I know how to take care of my family. And that's my first obligation.
That's right. And so that's why one of these pillars of positive peace is economic opportunity. If there's no economic opportunity in the land, that's what's going to happen because you have to feed your family, right? And so I'm starting to wade in a little bit too deep in some of these areas. All I can say is these 8 pillars are key markers that the Institute for Economics and Peace have found in countries where the peace index is high. And all the countries are ranked by a peace index. You can find that on that same website, Economics and Peace.
Believe me, you're not too deep because I can follow you.
Okay.
And I'm a slow learner.
Well, I'm getting deep in, I'm almost getting to the place where I can't talk about it any further because I don't have the data with me and I'm not the one that did the research. But I can tell you there are a lot of really smart people working on this. And one of the ways is if you get enough data together and you get the right models together, you can say, here are things that look like they're working. Let's see if we can incorporate them when new governments are put in place or when new decisions need to be made. Where before, I'm not sure the data was there. People kind of got lucky or unlucky. Did they do those things or not? So that's how I would talk to a governing body, should I ever have that kind of opportunity, is there is data, and the data points at these eight categories.
As a result of your appearance on this show, you may be asked to appear before the United Nations.
That's what I hear. I understand that's kind of tradition here.
It was Governor Brewer, the God Show, and then the United Nations.
Yeah, what a trajectory.
That's awesome. Have you traveled abroad?
A little bit, not a lot.
Where?
I've been to Europe several times. I've been to Latin America. I've been to Hong Kong, Taiwan, Australia.
Great cross-section, though, of cultures.
I have not been to Africa. I have been to Asia, but I have not, and I have not been to the Middle East much.
Whether you have been there or not, please, if you will, take just a moment to explain Switzerland to me. Switzerland, a very small geographic part of the globe, highly sophisticated. Academically, they do very, very well with families who continue to pursue their educations. And they seem to have great medical programs that the people like. They don't seem to be in debt. And yet, the Switzerland that I know, with three different cultures living together in three different regions of the country, the German region and the French region and the Italian region, and they proudly say, no, this is a pacifist country. No, we don't enter into conflict with anybody, including the ones that are right next door. And the ones next door during World War II stayed out of Switzerland. Has it ever occurred to you that some countries like that, and Denmark and Norway and Sweden, in general, seem to be the folks who mind their own business?
Well, I'm definitely out of my water here. I could simply say I have no idea. But I think there is some of that, of not forcing your way on other people, because that's when things start to get a little difficult, right? We all know the neighbors on our blocks that kind of stick to themselves, but are okay. They're not weird or anything like that.
No, those are international countries.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of the same. It's kind of the same thing, though, versus forcing your will, making sure, like in your neighborhood, I got to make sure we have an HOA. Well, why would you do that? We're peaceful here, right? That kind of thing, right? And so maybe there is something to that. And I think I think you can probably find that on the personal level in addition to the national level, I guess is what I'm saying.
It does seem strange, and it's a very small part. I mean, if you talk about those countries in particular.
They have chocolate.
Yes, right. And watches.
Yeah, there you go.
And so they know when they're late for war, and they
say,
early
for chocolate.
Please forget it. Rosemary, would you look up Rosemary Scarfo, my beloved producer for 30 years? Would you look up to see if there are any HOAs in Switzerland? Geneva
okay.
or
right.
Zurich,
idea.
It doesn't matter. What?
Okay, that's great.
She's so good. And listen, because you've studied this, and you seem to humbly think, well, wait a minute, what am I talking about? These are international things involving peace and strife and greed and violence. Well, the reason we asked you is because you came highly recommended, not by the House of Representatives here in Arizona, because you've been keeping them, in a position of maintaining decorum and civility. Can you do that in Washington?
Well, if they ask me, I would love to go try.
So. And when I say Washington now, so that nobody out there is
like
jumping
Seattle.
Out of the car, I'm talking about No, not that Washington, no. But if anybody is automatically responding, say, oh, he's talking about this administration. No, I'm talking about Washington.
No.
It's no not, matter who's in office.
That's right. It's not an administration-specific thing. Right. I mean, it's really interesting to see really good ideas got shot down because those ideas belong to the other guy. You know, that's very disappointing.
But that isn't even logical, and it still happens.
It happens every day.
But if it isn't logical, and it's not in the best interest of that person to get reelected for a permanent position in the congressional organization that he's in, then why do they do it?
It's a calculus, right?
Explain that to me.
Well, I mean,
you're around these people.
Well, not on the national level, I'm not. But it's really a calculus. How do I keep my constituents happy at the same time that I make it look like the other party's not getting a win?
That's hypocritical, right? Though, isn't it?
That's why I don't run for office, because I think it's a necessary part of the thing.
Do you respect the people who do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I highly respect anybody that runs for any office. Part of it is because it's like kryptonite to me, but they're stepping out. They're stepping outside of themselves to do what they think is right. I mean, I'd agree with that, whatever that is. But they're doing it. Imagine what our country would look like without that. I mean, we have examples around the world that we could look at what it would look like. So I'm very thankful for elected officials, regardless of which party, and I'm very proud of them for doing what they do, even though I don't agree with them all the time.
And I, too, respect anybody who decides to take that somewhat suicidal step. Because it's going to be painful, you're going to be insulted, and you have to raise so much money, Chuck. I mean, that in itself is a demeaning kind of thing. Hello, I'd like to represent you because I have these ideas, and I want your family to be better. Now, could you give me a check?
Right.
That's a dreadful position to be in.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you're always campaigning, always.
But you still respect the people who do it.
Absolutely, I do. 100%.
What happens to them once they get into office? Well, I don't mean just in Arizona.
Yeah.
I'm talking about anywhere, and let's narrow it down to the United States.
Well, I think what happens is you have in your mind what you want to do, what you think is best for your community and on the national level, your country, and you try to do those things. You try to... you try to reason with people that don't see the same way you see, and you try to move the needle. And one of the things that we do see on the national level, we see it on the state level too, is this idea of it's not perfect, so I'm voting no. Well, what happened to moving the needle just a little bit? Let's make it a little bit better. And we see that all the time on the national level. You know, it's got to be perfect or I'm voting no. And there's no such thing as perfect.
I was just reading about a comedian, a very, very talented woman named Sarah Silverman.
Oh, yes.
Do you know the latest story about Sarah?
I do not.
Okay. I'm going to tell you. And this will be brief, and then you get a chance to comment. Sarah Silverman was about to receive a call, I mean a day away from a call from a producer of a major motion picture. She's already been in some very important pieces of film, and she's really good. And Sarah Silverman was going to be offered an important role in this big movie, which meant big money. And they called and said, I'm sorry, but we can't give this to you. And she said, can you tell me why? Because you were yesterday. He said, well, because somebody called our attention to the fact that 7 years ago, I repeat, 7 years ago, you did a comedy sketch. Anti-racism was the premise, but she did it in blackface. Now, I haven't seen the bit, but at least I can understand, as somebody who's been involved in comedy for a lot of years, sometimes you play that other role, and it makes the entire situation funnier because you're satirizing people who actually did that at one time, right? She lost, just this past week, she lost a major movie role, a career-changing kind of thing, because 7 years ago, she happened to do this in blackface. And she explained, but wait a minute, do you understand that I was playing the role that would be positive in this case, right? I'm on your side. And they said, we can't afford the conflict. We can't afford the conflict because the people who will write to the newspapers or be on social media writing about the movie, writing about us, writing about you, will only say Sarah Silverman was found to have done something 7 years ago in blackface. And it seems that these days nobody wants to listen to anyone's explanation for anything. It's cut and dried. You said this, you did this, I don't want to hear any explanation. That, to me, is not an example of a peaceful society. Comment.
Well, I fully agree with what you just said. It is not an example. How can we expect to have peaceful outcomes when 100% of the time we're looking for that one piece of dirt, that one thing that we can fake our outrage over? I mean, that's an antithesis to peace.
But what if we're just outrageous because the person that's talking to me is a Republican?
Yeah.
And I'm a Democrat. Or
vice, yeah.
Or I'm a Catholic and you're a Jew. Right. But you're on the other side. Rather than simply discourse going on between the two of you who happen to see some things differently.
Yeah, I'm going to wade into another pool I don't know much about here to answer that.
This is a wading pool.
Yes, and I think that I think that there's some real issues in the lives of people that they haven't reconciled, and that's how they act because of that. And so, again, at this conference it's coming up in September, which we'll talk about, one of the speakers is going to talk about how do you reconcile some of the things that have happened in your past and some of the relationships, because whether you know it or not, those things are coming out. They're coming out in your behavior now.
Now more than ever before.
Yes, and now you have a society, or you have a social media, or whatever the right phrase is, that gives you the platform to do that, you know? And so until you reconcile those things, they're always going to kind of be there. And so I have something that I started saying a couple years ago that I firmly believe, and that is, I think peace is an inside job first. If you don't take care of whatever it is that you're carrying around, whether you like to admit you're carrying it or not, you're not going to be very effective in the larger society. And so peace is an inside job first is, I think, part of what's going on in that example that you gave.
It does seem also that this is a period of time where debate, whether it's a formal debate or just people screaming at one another on the street corner, is more passionate and more out of control than ever before. I've never seen a time in which disagreement can be so disagreeable. I love having an evening with friends and finding out that they feel very, very differently than I do about another issue. That helps me grow, and it would seem to me that has nothing to do with any great standard of character that I have.
Yeah.
If you just listen to people.
You can disagree with people but still like them, right? I think, but you don't see a lot of that. And so I think what we're trying to get at with this conference is to really chip away at that a little bit, that there's a place for you and your relationships that isn't based on a differing viewpoints.
Now, this is September the 20th?
Yes, it's September the 20th.
September the 20th. Now, we're talking to people in Switzerland, Denmark, and Sweden right now.
Awesome.
And Laos and Java. And that always has been exciting to me. However, some of them might be saying, you know, I haven't been to Arizona. September 20th sounds like a good time to go.
Yes.
What will they see?
Okay. So on September 20th here in Arizona, in Peoria, which is a suburb of Phoenix, We will have a one-day event where we have five speakers from different professions will come in, and they'll talk about justice, a prerequisite to peace.
Mm.
And they'll do it from their different lenses. I mentioned one earlier. We have an Arizona Supreme Court justice. His name is Clint Bullock. He will be talking about peace in the judiciary here in Arizona. We have Dr. Eileen Boris from the ASU Thunderbird School of Global Management. She'll be talking about forgiveness and how that relates to justice and peace. We have a young lady who's co-founder of Amplify Peace, and she'll be talking about how storytelling and healing that comes from it contributes to justice and peace.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. We have a police chief from the city of Peoria here. He'll be talking about what peace looks like from his jurisdiction. And finally, we have a speaker who is an American Sudanese. He came to the United States as a refugee, became a citizen, and now he has an advisory firm that does research and white paper kind of work regarding conflicts in South Sudan. So that's the speaker list for the day.
They invented conflict in Sudan.
Or it was right next door. Yes, I know. It's amazing what's been happening there my entire lifetime. So those are the speakers. And so the idea is to start off on a global level, like what the South Sudanese, right? Then move down to regional, Arizona judiciary, move down to neighborhood, the police chief, move into personal things like forgiveness and storytelling and healing. So the day will start off kind of out there and slowly, gradually move back in towards the individual. And every step of the way, getting ideas on things you can do to help create more peaceful outcomes in your life and in your community.
That sounds extraordinary. Where is it going to be again? And this is for everybody listening everywhere. Where is it going to be? How much does it cost?
Sure.
And what are the days?
Okay, again, it's going to be here in Arizona, Peoria, Arizona. It costs $50 to attend. It's September 20th. It's a full day. And all the information regarding that can be found at pursuingpeace.org.
So you really believe that you can teach people how to be peaceful?
I think so. If I can give you an example, if that's okay.
Am I going to have a conflict situation?
No. We're not role playing. No. I convened, or a few of us convened a peace conference last year by the same name. And there was a lady that attended this conference, didn't know she was there. She was on the list, but didn't know her. A couple months later, she calls me and says, you know, I work for the Phoenix Police Department. We could use some police here, or peace here. I'm sorry. We could use some peace here. I said, okay, I'll come over. So I went over and talked to him. And what came out of the conversation is there are call center agents in the Phoenix 911 call center who receive horrible calls all the time. Child drownings, officer-involved shootings, domestic violence, elder abuse. So just the list goes on and on, right? Well, what are we doing for these call center agents? They wanted us to be able to help the call center agents.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out and got some community partners together, and we're putting together a quiet room for the call center agents at the police department.
Wow.
To help them find just a little bit of peace in their lives.
The simplicity of that.
And to tell them, hey, your community cares about you. So we're doing something. It moves the needle a little bit for those call center agents and maybe the people on the other end of the phone. But it doesn't take care of the big issues that we think of when we think of peace, right?
But that's what you were talking about a little while ago, is solving a problem is not necessarily solving the entire problem for the planet. If you move the needle just a little bit.
Any act of service outside of yourself is an act of peace.
Well, we'd like to be of service to everyone who's listening right now. We're going to do this with a major announcement. We just got a call from Zurich. And found that there is a homeowners association in Switzerland. Now, they haven't spoken to one another for years, but...
Okay, I'm not going to say anything off the cuff ever again. That was a bad example.
No. I was the one who brought up Switzerland, and because they've just simply managed to stay out of conflicts for so long when so many people seem to have difficulties in so many countries, so many governments? You think, wait a minute, what in the world could possibly have irritated somebody in Bhutan where there's 14 people, you know? But somewhere you will find a story about some government representative doing something in opposition to another government. By the way, the HOA, true, that we did a little research.
Yeah.
My staff of 175 people managed to find out that there is an HOA in Switzerland. So any of you who are thinking about buying property, at least we've gotten you past that barrier.
Please make it stop.
teaching peace to others, by the way, as you do and as you will on the 20th. That's one thing. How many kids do you have? I know you have kids and grandkids.
Yes, I have 3 adult children and 6 grandchildren. And I kind of say that with an asterisk on it because there's a half-sister in there and there's some other folks. So,
but they're kids in the family.
Yeah, they're kids in the family. And so I tell people I need 20 minutes and a whiteboard to explain it. But it's a fun family, and they're all doing great.
Here you have 15 minutes in a radio station, and I want you to explain how it is that you explained peace to your children and maybe your grandchildren.
Well, I don't know that I ever sat down and said, okay, let me explain peace to you, but they see me. They watch me all the time.
Well, that was the way you did it.
Right, that through example. You know, and that's part of my my spiritual upbringing too, and it's part of the gospel, if you will. St. Francis of Assisi says, preach the gospel. Always, if necessary, use words. You know, and that's kind of it. And so,
you know, I've never heard that quote in my life, and I've done shows about St. Francis of Assisi. I've had Franciscans on this program.
Okay.
Could you repeat that again?
Yeah,
it's so profound.
I may not have it verbatim, but it's very close.
Chuck, stop.
It is.
No, stop.
Preach
the humility. We have no humble guests.
Preach the gospel continuously. If necessary, use words.
Oh. Now, listen, I gave you people a chance to grab a pencil. Could you argue with that? Oh, I mean, the mime who represents peaceful living and the idea of you as an example to your kids and grandkids. Did it work?
I think it's still a work in progress.
How old are your grandkids?
My grandkids, and this is really exciting news, my eldest grandchild is 18, and yesterday he was sworn into the Marine Corps, United States Marine Corps. And so he's in boot camp. It's his first day of boot camp today.
Oh, Semper Fi, my friend.
Yes, yes. So his name is AJ. And so I have 2 grandchildren that are 18. One just turned 14 last week. I think there's an 11-year-old and a 12-year-old in there, and there's... Yeah, I start to lose track a little bit.
I'm laughing because you're speaking for every father and grandfather, right?
Yeah. So it's a work in progress. So they see me. They see the way they see me on social media. They see me in person. They see the things that I work on in the community, and it rubs off on them.
And, how?
They start doing things
like.
They start volunteering for nonprofits. They start, you know, that sort of thing.
Even the grandchildren.
Yeah, and they care about that kind of stuff. And I don't think I've ever given them a reason to go, oh, grandpa, that's bad. I don't think I've done that. Maybe I have, but I've forgotten it if I have. But they know I'm putting on this peace conference. They understand that things are a little bit out of control in society. You know, something I like, here's how I like to talk about. When I was in the private sector, I managed quite a few number of people, and we had a saying, and that is, what you look at improves in business. If you look at inventory, it improves. If you look at employees, they improve. If you look at sales, it improves. If you don't look at something, it starts to kind of falter a little bit. It's the same thing with this. If we're not looking at peace, how can we expect it to improve? if we're not talking about it, we're going to continue to drift away from it. So I think people need to talk more about it. We need to do more about it. It needs to be done in the pulpit. It needs to be done in the marketplace. It needs to be done in government. And Chuck is doing it in Arizona on September 20th with some of his friends that have offered to come speak about this.
In case you're not on a first-name basis, that's Chuck Fitzgerald.
Yes.
That he's talking about. Oh, how do people get in touch? Wherever they are listening, they may not have access to that kind of information in their communities. So how do they get in touch with you?
Well, if you were to go to pursuingpeace.org, there are resources. There's a way to leave me a message. There's all sorts of things related to this.
Okay, pursuingpeace.org.
Yes.
And if you haven't decided that it's interesting this moment, and then you think it over, and maybe you talk to your spouse about it, and you both say, hey, what are we out?
So something you'll find on that website that helps people that don't live near here, if they want to participate, there's a way to donate to support the conference. And there's also a very special raffle, a very artistic peace pole that we're raffling. You can buy raffle tickets online. So
a peace pole?
Yes.
This is not a man from Warsaw.
No, it's not. Oh, boy.
What is the peace pole?
it's basically a pole.
Like a maypole?
Yes, it's very much like that. That you can plant in community gardens. You can go put it in your backyard. You can put it on next to the library. But I have one that's a very limited edition artist rendition that is being raffled off at this conference. But you don't have to be there to win it. And we'll ship it anywhere in the world for the winner.
Hey, you know, I've never heard of a peace pole before. What a great idea anyway. And what a great idea for another organization somewhere else to say, hey, here's something we could do our organization.
Yes, go put a peace pole out in your...
Yeah, what's on it?
So what it says is, may peace prevail on earth in four different languages.
Uh-huh.
And so this particular one that I have, it's English, Spanish, French, and Hebrew.
Wow. Well, that covers quite
and you can gap. And you can order these, and you can pick your own languages and whatnot, but this particular one is a very limited edition.
And I want everybody to know that just because you may not have had a pencil or a pen handy, Star Worldwide Networks, that really is all you have to know to get in touch with me or any of the people that we have here. And through, once again, the genius of our staff members, what did I say, 175 people the last time? Because we just hired 185 people on the staff to bring this show to you, and one of them came over with a peace pole. And it's quite a work of art, Chuck.
It's beautiful. I had it sitting in my living room for a couple weeks, and right now it's at the Arizona House of Representatives.
This is 40 inches tall, right?
And they come in different sizes. The one that we're raffling off is 6 foot.
I want to get back to the grandkids. You said 14-year-old.
Yes.
Right? Boy or girl?
Girl.
Okay. She comes to her grandfather. For whatever reason, she chooses Grandpa Chuck. And she's in tears, and she says, these girls won't stop picking on me.
Right.
Bullies, girls, boys of almost any age. That's a form of warfare. The fear that comes out of that for the kids who are the victims of bullying in school. Do you have any solution, or is that going to be touched on in September?
Yeah, see, that's a huge issue throughout society. And I'll answer the question at the end of this little story, and it'll be very quick. I have a relationship with the school district where I live. I have for a number of years. Mm-hmm. Part of that has to do with my Rotary background. And so every year we go and we talk to the school superintendent. We say, what do you need? What's going on in the schools? What do we need? A few years back, the superintendent, after a long silence, said, well, there's a lot of self-harm on our campuses. Everything from cutting to suicide. And then there's also harm to others in the form of bullying and fighting and that sort of thing. And so they said, what can you do about that? And you go, okay, that's a big one. How do we do that? And so what we came up with is we decided that one of the things that would be excellent at the high school level would be to have peer-to-peer mentoring, almost peer-to-peer or peer reconciliation, peer mediation kind of thing.
How do you pick the peacemakers in a school?
Well, the teachers know who these kids are. They know. But you train them up to kind of diffuse situations like that. So I tell you all that to say that I've had a situation like that with this granddaughter, and there's only a couple things you can do. One is you have to hug them and hold them tight, and the other is you have to make sure they understand that they're worthy as they are. If they don't understand that, then they're never going to get past that. You are worthy. Your worth is not determined by how someone else acts. Your worth comes from somewhere else, right? And so you need to be part of that. You need to be strong in that and stand in that. And I think all of my grandchildren do that. I'm not saying that they don't have their moments, but they know they're loved by their family and they know that they're worthy. Don't let somebody else dictate your worth.
I wish that every parent and grandparent listening right now would just absorb that, because you really didn't approach it as if you were an academic authority in the field of child raising. You approached it like a grandfather.
Right.
The fact that we have as much violence in America, disproportionately, and I don't think anybody could argue that, but as much violence as we have, whether it's gun violence or whether it's the fighting in the streets, or whether it's violent entertainment. I know that some governments, and the subject here with Chuck Fitzgerald coming to us for this hour, the subject is peace. It's just keep a peaceful aura about you, and then that'll help me, and that'll help my immediate area, and who knows how far that can extend.
You know,
then I go home, though. Then I go home, right? And it's exploding car after decapitation, after dismemberment. And that's a great deal of entertainment in America.
Yeah. You know, just very quickly, in the world of Rotary, we have something we call the four-way test. All right, the four-way test of what we think, say, or do, and very quickly they are, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? Is it beneficial to all concerned? If it does all four of those things, it's probably okay to do it or to say it or to think it. If it doesn't do all those things, you may want to just hold back on it. So I think if more people kind of took this attitude of, is what I'm doing really beneficial? It may be the truth, but sometimes the truth isn't all that beneficial, right? So maybe just keep it to yourself.
Now, are you talking about the people now who are the members of the audience of violent entertainment? Because that also includes a lot of sports.
I think it's everybody. I think if you're sitting there putting a movie together and you say, hey, is this really beneficial? You know, maybe I shouldn't do it. But, you know, that's where the money is. So.
Well, the answer is, Chuck, listen. That's wonderful. I'm glad you came to my office to find out what we were doing. And I'm glad you asked me about the beneficial part. But it's beneficial to my billfold.
That's right.
It's beneficial to my bank account. And my job is to make money with these movies.
Yep.
So, Chuck, we are surrounded by violence. And I am told by professionals that part of the problem that we have in the United States with violence, ergo absence of peace, is desensitization. What are you going to do about it?
What we look at improves. That's where I want to leave this. If we look at peace, it will improve. If we're not looking at it, it won't. So I think it's up to us to do that.
No, I don't want you to leave with that. I want you to leave with something else.
Okay.
I mean, looking at it is tremendously important, but I really would like you to repeat St. Francis of Assisi, because I have an agreement with him. He doesn't charge us when somebody uses one of his quotes.
Yes. It goes something like, preach the gospel continuously. If necessary, use words.
Mm. Chuck, there's only one thing left, and that is for you to invite my friends in Guam who are listening right now to the September event. And if you're listening to this, by the way, after September, boy, did you miss something.
Pursuingpeace.org.
That's it?
That's it.
September 20th, and you'll probably walk out at least knowing a great deal more about how to spread the peaceful word. Oh, that's what we've been doing, isn't it? And we call our session The God Show. Thanks for being with us.